Hi, I'm Stacey Shoemaker-Rowan, Editor-in-Chief of Hospitality Design Magazine with HD's What I've Learned podcast. Today, I sat down with Keith Menon, co-founder of his namesake development company. A graduate of Cornell School of Hotel Administration, the Miami native has spent his career building an eclectic portfolio in the tourist destination. With such energetic projects as the Sanctuary South Beach, which he conceived when he was just 23 years old, Bodega Taqueria and Tequila, and most recently, the redo of the Shelbourne South Beach Hotel. If one thing is clear from our career and life-spanning interview, it's Menon's unabashed enthusiasm and ability to give 100% to every project he takes on, which includes his next, the stunning 51-story Nativa Miami, which is a residential hospitality lifestyle hybrid, which will once again bring his passion for creating exciting spaces for people to experience to life when it opens in the near future. Hi, I'm here with Keith Menon. Keith, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So we always start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
I was born and raised in Miami Beach.
Nice. And did you always have a love of hospitality or design? Was that part of your childhood?
You know what? I wouldn't say I've always had it, but I developed it when I was about 11 or 12 years old. An uncle of mine bought the Shelbourne Hotel on Collins Avenue. And when he bought it, we started having, you know, family dinners there and holiday dinners, and, you know, just really being there. So it was at that time that I really, like, you know, walked in the back house, the kitchen first, and saw this big operation. And then I really realized that I kind of liked the action of it, even at a young age. So since then, I've been very intrigued in hospitality on, you know, every level. And then I would say, after I graduated Cornell Hotel School at about 23 years old, I really got into design, which has enveloped a lot more, you know, obviously as I've grown up. So the two kind of meshed together from an early age, for sure.
Amazing. And so what was it like working at the Shelbourne? What did you learn? What was your favorite job? Did you like try everything?
Yeah, so I started working there when I was about 16, and it was a summer. And really, every summer, I decided to work for my uncle in some capacity. And that summer, I was 16 years old, and I got a job at the Shelbourne to work all summer long. And the goal was really to learn every department and really understand how a hotel functions from the front door to the back door and up and down. And in doing that, you know, I started out at the front desk. You imagine, like, a little 16-year-old kid with the vest on, the name tag in the old days. And, you know, checking guests in, checking guests out, which is one of the hardest jobs because, you know, you get guests that come in that are either upset because they missed their flight or maybe their boyfriend or girlfriend thought, or, you know, it's just always a different personality. So what it got me to realize was that to make everybody happy, right? And that's the DNA of hospitality. And I quickly learned that, you know, if people came off their flight late, they were stressed out, you know, buy them a little drink card and give them two drinks at the lobby bar. Or, you know, upgrade someone if it was, you know, something important. So I really learned how to deal with every check-in differently and to hopefully have them all leaving happy. But I really did every department that summer. I did front desk. I did PBX, which is the phone operator, which, if you imagine, the old days was, you know, 10 phone lines ringing everywhere. It was like today when you had, you know, iPhones and Expedia and, you know, really online stuff. It was more phone calls, travel agents and guests and room reservations. So I started out at PBX, which is really the phone operator. It really taught me how the building functions, to front desk, to bellman, to pool boy, to kitchen, all the way out to valet. So there wasn't a position I didn't do that summer. And that was really how I really got started, really learning how a hotel functions.
So fun. Was there one experience or, you know, one story that kind of sticks out from that summer or one lesson learned?
You know, thankfully it was some years ago, so I don't remember the exact story, but the lesson that I left there learning was make sure every guest comes and make them happy when they arrive and make sure they leave happy. It's a good first impression and a last impression that I think was really my takeaway of my summer there was, you know, you have to make people happy when they arrive and make them happy when they leave.
Exactly. The essence of hospitality. And so you went to Cornell, and then after that, you and your cousin Jared jumped right into opening the Sanctuary South Beach, right? Or was there something in between?
So I graduated Cornell Hotel School, and I quickly came home to start work. Jared's younger than me, so he was still in college for a few years after me. So I took a building that my family owned that was an old nursing home, and I convinced them to let me turn into my first hotel called the Sanctuary. And, you know, really it was just me and an intern that I, you know, found through a friend, and did everything from the logo to the branding to the construction to the interior design to the opening to the press. Like, I literally did it all. Like, I was, you know, 23 years old and, you know, living on the beach, and my sole goal was just to you know, make this thing happen. And I think the Sanctuary was probably the most successful condo hotel ever done in its day. We sold out at $1,200 a foot when no one ever hit those numbers before. We opened and branded, very successful. The press was huge. The perception was huge for back then. So, I mean, I would say our opening party was probably the best parties Miami ever saw in its time. So, I opened that and I ran that for probably around 3 years. And then Jared graduated and came down. I was building the Mondrian Hotel at the time, partnered with Morgan's, where I was more the developer. And the called Visionary, they were the operator, because I really wasn't an operator. I'm at one little hotel and, you know, that was it. And then at that time when I realized that I saw some flaws how they operate, and I was like, you know what, if I want to be in the hospitality business, like, I don't rely on anybody else. And it was at that point I told Jared, who's his strength was operations, was, you know, why don't you build a team that can operate our hotels, you know, so we're not relying on anybody else. And that's when we actually really formed Men in Hospitality and started to really be active in the business.
Got it. And so Sanctuary, I mean, you're 23, you're in Miami, you know, what motivated you to do, you know, like to step out of school and do something so elaborate, you know, such a big undertaking?
You know, so I always want to be successful. When I was in Cornell, you know, there's only 100 kids in each class. You can imagine 100 are probably some of the smartest kids in the world are in school with you. And some are going to finance, some are going to hotels. And I was like one of those entrepreneurial guys that, like, I didn't really want to do any of that. Like, I was like, I want to figure out my own thing in a way. And what motivated me was really to be successful. And I knew that I was going to make mistakes. I made plenty of mistakes. I knew that I was going to, you know, make some errors, which I did. But I really was intrigued just to, like, do my thing, right? And just, you know, step into it. Like, instead of, look, I probably could have worked in a hotel for 3 years and then went back to that. But I also believe that, you know, time goes by very, very quickly, and time is, you know, it's perishable. Like, you can't get it back. So for me, the decision was just jump into this thing, make some mistakes, have fun. But I really put everything I had into it. Like, that's all I did. Like, I literally was living, breathing, promoting, opening, learning. Like, it was all I did. So when you're 23, 24 years old, no wife, no kids, no girlfriend, right? Like, you can really dedicate 100% of your bandwidth to something. Where nowadays, I'm older, you know, I have a lot more going on. So it was a timing thing where I had 100% of my time to give to this thing. And that was really what I think made it successful.
So was there something that you learned building the Sanctuary at 23?
I think the biggest lesson was we did the building. My family owned it. We're supposed to have about a $5 million budget to renovate it. And I didn't really know about construction or budgets or any of this stuff. So it was literally, I mean, I learned in school, but, you know, it was really just me just kind of, you know, guessing at it. And I'll never forget, you know, my family was funding this themselves. You know, people were paying for it. I had no money at the time. And I remember my Uncle Russell one day looks at me and he goes, "You're at $8 million. He goes, "What is wrong with you?" He goes, "Keith, if you blow this deal, no one backs you again." He's like, "What good is your last deal? This is your first deal. It's a bloodbath." So at that point, he told me, he's like, "You're never making your money back. You know, as a third motel. I don't know what you did here. I still wasn't even done." He's like, $4 million worth of finish. And that's when I came with a solution of doing a condo hotel. I said, "You know, I'll figure it out." And we finished the property at $10 million. I was supposed to spend five, you can imagine. This is 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And the only way to get the money back was to sell the units off as a condo, regroup our money, and own the front desk business of the condo hotel and the restaurant. And that's when I quickly shifted to sales mode, and I did that. I sold all 30 units. I paid back all my money, and I was left with the hotel for free But that was probably the biggest lesson that I remember of him telling me that, you know, you're kind of as good as your last deal. And he was right. Like, I lost $10 million at 25 years old. No one's giving me any more money again.
Right.
So, you know, that was the most important lesson was to, and my takeaway was to, you know, really build a building on pen and paper first. It's much cheaper, much easier, rather than just start building and being organized. So that was probably the biggest lesson of that project.
Yeah. All right. So you're working on the Mondrian. You get together with Jared. What's next? Did you guys finish the Mondrian? Did you move on? Where did you want to go once you formed
the Mondrian, you know, which we owned? We then went and we did we managed a hotel inside Chicago called the Raffaello, which was just, you know, a great Gold Coast hotel where Jared was actually working at the time. So we did this Chicago. We then took over the Shelbourne and renovated that. We then later did the Gale Hotel and the Cascade Hotel. And then, you know, in that we also threw in food and beverage like Bodega. So we started opening Bodega Taquerias, which is very successful. That's actually, you know, one of our biggest growth products now. And then, you know, our most exciting one is we're going to, you know, so I'm actually also building a TiVo outside of Menin. It's a family project of just, you know, our family office, the Gallagher family office, and Libby, myself, and Marissa. And I'm building that outside of my hospitality business. But what's exciting is that Menin Hospitality is going to manage that asset. And it's a monster building, probably one of the tallest towers in Miami. Super exciting, very high energy. So that's probably our most exciting building that Menin's ever been involved in, and myself personally.
So what will it entail? Like what's in the building?
So the reason it's exciting is that the TiVo is a 51-story vertical building. It's in the heart of Miami. And what's exciting about it is it's not just, you know, a normal building that we sell condos, we have a lobby and a gym, and it's just what it is. We decided to put everything that we know into one tower and really do a hospitality 2.0 building where you're going to have the first floor of this beautiful Dolce Mercato market, marketplace restaurant. We then have about 7 floors of office space, its own lobby, which is beautiful 14-foot high glass, matte black mullion, brick facade. And it's going to be really, you know, cool office space, just, you know, great energy. Above that, we have what we're calling the TiVo Social, which will be 70,000 feet of amenity space on one level, which will have a pool deck on the east that goes from the pool deck to an inside library, bar, restaurant, a speakeasy bar, an outside cocktail lounge, sunset bar. And then we have a 45,000 foot gym and spa, which is spectacular. Boxing rings, hammams, you know, everything cool you can think of for those kind of amenities. And there's one nice staircase that connects the office, the amenities, and the gym, so you can flow without the lifestyle. We then have a Gale Hotel, which is a 200-room hotel, which is the closest hotel to the Port of Miami. So the Port is one of the biggest pre-booking and post-booking nights more than any convention in Miami, where we have guests that come to the Port of Miami all the time. They cruise at the stay before and after. So we believe in the closest hotel to the Port. We'll get tremendous business from there. Then above that, we have 425 residential units that are spectacular. They are designed for home sharing. So most condos don't like home sharing, and most hotels don't like home sharing. We decided to embrace it, and we're actually going to be embracing home sharing throughout the tower. And we have 4 floors of penthouse designed by Restoration Hardware, which are beautiful, spectacular RH penthouses for people to buy as well. So it's really the most energy I've ever seen in one building in one vertical space. And we've done phenomenal. We've already, LDV Hospitality is operating all the food and beverage led by John Meadow. They're the founders of Scarpetta and Dolce and a lot of other brands out of New York City. Menin Hospitality is going to manage the Gale Hotel as well as the TiVo platform for the owners that put into the program. And we're about 80% sold out now. We sold, I think, 60 units in the last 45 days. We took a trip to Mexico last week and did over 20 sales. So we're anticipating being sold out by the end of the year. We've already broken ground on the property, and it's just fantastic. So if you have time, definitely look at the webpage, and it's a very, very special product.
Wow, that's amazing. Thanks, Austin, just thinking about it all. But I mean,
imagine building.
Yeah, exactly. So is this, you know, your everything's so integrated these days, right? So is this how you think people will live and work and stay with all these amenities? I mean, is this how you think, you know, like the next evolution of hospitality?
100%. I think before COVID, people always talked about this whole live, work, play thing. Now with COVID, I think people are moving to it. And I think that people also realize that they're more effective. You know, like you're not losing an hour driving to the office there and back, plus an elevator, plus a cup of coffee. It's like people, I mean, at least people that I deal with every day, even outside my company, they're much more effective. Zoom, you know, all these different conference calls, Teams meetings, like everyone's doing much more. So I think the fact that somebody can either live full time in a TiVo or rent there or come there for a season, have an office space downstairs, have the best gym in, you know, probably Miami there, have an amazing amenity floor where you can have breakfast meetings, lunch meetings, a speakeasy bar at nighttime, a cocktail, or spend the day by the pool on Saturday and Sunday. You know, just mix being in the hub of Miami, they're just going to be like living in this, you know, big vertical building of energy. So people have really been liking that tremendously. So yeah, I mean, I think when we built the TiVo, we always envisioned this to happen, but we didn't think there would be as much demand for this stuff. So I think it's been a great thing for us.
So how did you pick your collaborators, RH, and then also John Meadow, who's an amazing restaurateur?
So John Meadow and I went to Cornell Hotel School together. And I've watched John grow his career, and you know, he's also one of my best friends. So we've been best friends. We met in Cornell, and I've watched him grow and develop a company. So it was a natural blend to kind of, you know, not John to kind of take over that aspect, because I think he's the best in the business, you know, and really programming, designing, and executing on such a big, large F&B scale. So that was kind of a natural progression. RH, you know, I'm a fan of all brands. What I liked about them is that they're really investing a lot in these flagship stores they're building and restaurants and really the marketing. So it's one of those things where I think it's a global brand people know. It's a household brand. So, you know, we were intrigued to deal with them. Plus, they're nice people. They're easy to work with. I like their style. So that's kind of why we chose RH.
Got it. And who did you collaborate on the rest of the design?
So the rest of the design, I collaborated with a firm I've been using for a long time. They're very talented. Locally named Urban Robot, and a gentleman named John Carlo. And John Carlo is very, very talented. He gets kind of the palette we're going for. So they were really instrumental, and I think that they really get tremendous credit for creating such a great palette on the TiVo.
And you've collaborated with some great designers along the way, including John Carlo. What makes for a successful collaboration for you, or what do you look for, you know, in a collaborator for your projects?
I think first most is finding a person that gets the vision, because not every designer understands every palette. So I first say to myself, you know, who's the right designer, who's the right collaborating partner for this firm to, you know, make this vision come alive. And I think when everyone's interests are aligned, everyone's super excited about something, it works. So like John Carlo was beyond excited this project, like almost more excited than anyone in the room was. And I love that energy. So to me, I think it's finding someone who has the right vision, who gets the palette we're trying to execute, and has really high energy and dedication to work hard. And that's recipe for success.
So let's go back for a minute to your other hotels. What was it like redoing the Shelbourne, something that you grew up in, that was in your family? What was it like to transform it for, you know, the next wave of guests?
It was great. You know, the Shelbourne needed it. It was a very old, dated hotel. It didn't change when I was 16 or probably 11. So it was exciting to look and re-envision this place, you know, and we knew it, right? So we knew every inch, every corner of it. So it was somewhat easy because we knew the property and we knew what it's about. And it was exciting to re-envision a whole new look, a whole new brand, a whole new interior, you know, to make the place great. And I think we did a great job of that.
Tell us about your restaurant, Bodega Taqueria and Tequila, because it's a fun space. And you also had like a hidden door right behind for like a cocktail place. I remember going there in Miami. But tell us about that concept and what you wanted to create that didn't exist already.
So Bodega Taqueria and Tequila was one of our most exciting things we created. And what happened was we realized there was a void in the space where Miami was just nightclubs, and they opened at midnight, and you'd have to wait till midnight to go out and get a drink, and then your night became very long. And what we did was, you know, we decided that we found this warehouse in really a weird area off Alton Road and West Avenue. It wasn't high traffic, was no tourists. And I said to myself, I want to create a cool bar that you can go to anytime you want, any night, where there's no promoters, there's no sparklers and bottles at a nightclub. It's a cool hang. And, you know, we also felt like Miami didn't have much Mexican food. And it's very Cuban influence. So that we created this kind of street food Mexican Airstream funky design of this little taqueria, which is about 500 square feet. And we thought at the time it would do maybe $400,000 in business. It's very small, right? It's four burners, it's a little Airstream, and it's teeny. And I think our first year we did $3.5 million just out of the taco stand. And what we did was, you know, we designed it ourselves. Like, there's no designer, it was just, you know, me and, you know, my little team, and just creating something really cool. And behind it, we built this really fun bar. And it was inspired by reclaimed wood and by, you know, all these different elements that I thought would be cool. And we decided to build this bar with no name. There's a porta potty door right into the taqueria with no name. So the idea was that I wanted people to, you know, kind of go there and text a friend, oh, come to this bar, you know, come to bodega. And you pull up, you see a taqueria, and you don't know what, like, where's the bar? It's a little baby taco stand where I don't know where everybody is. And you somehow found this door to get into the bar. That was the idea. The problem was the first time I opened it up was New Year's Eve, 6 years now. And I invited all my friends. I said, you know, let me invite my friends. Let's just do it. We'll keep the doors open. Whoever shows up. And around midnight, my friend goes, have you been outside? I said, no, I'm inside. He goes, go look outside, Keith. I walk outside. There's no windows in the bar. And there's a line down the street. I was like, wow. I'm like, you don't let everybody in. So everyone found out about it pretty quickly. And then it became this instant thing that was just like explosive. So we did it cool. The doorman's a nice guy. He has a shot of, you know, Jose Tequila Gold. And you get a shot and you come in. It's meant to be a neighborhood bar. And we really launched this Wednesday Night Live music, which was extremely successful. And Bodega's around 6 years now. And it's probably one of the most successful taquerias and bars and even a concept in South Florida, I think. So we recently decided to go on a very rapid expansion plan. And we opened up Fort Lauderdale about 3 months ago, which is beyond successful, which is incredible. We're opening up Coconut Grove, another freestanding building with a similar concept, in October. We're opening Palm Beach in November. And we're doing just our taqueria in Aventura in the next couple months. So Bodega is just an exciting, fun concept that we're now really rolling out all over. And I'll tell you, it's one of the most exciting concepts I've been a part of in the F&B space.
So fun. And are you evolving it at all? Or are you keeping it kind of, you know, what it was at its roots? Are you, you know, adapting it or, you know?
Yeah, we're building adapting the environment. So in Coconut Grove, we're going to do the taqueria. We're going to do a, call it beer garden-ish bar behind the taqueria. So it's like an outdoor kind of hang with a rooftop. And we're going to do about a 40-person small tequila mezcal bar upstairs on top of the taqueria. Because I think the Grove needs that like intimate, great bar. So instead of being like a bigger, call it, you know, 400-person lounge, we're going to go more of, you know, daytime hang and then this smaller bar. In Palm Beach, we're doing almost the same. In Fort Lauderdale, we did identical footprint to South Beach because the market really wanted that and it's received so well. And in Aventura, we're just doing a taqueria. So as we expand, you know, we don't just take the concept of the box and just plug and play. We really analyze the environment, the market, and we adapt to that. But they will all have the same essence, DNA, signatures, colors, palettes, and feeling as a bodega South Beach. But it is evolving and adapting as we grow.
Very cool. Sometimes the simplest concepts come out to be the best, right?
100%.
And the Gale was, it was an older building that you restored as well, or older hotel that you restored as well, correct?
Yes. The Gale was an old historic hotel you restored as well, yes.
And so why did that attract you? You know, why did you want to take that on and add that to your portfolio?
It was owned by my family. It was a great, great hotel. It was across from Delano. And, you know, it's in our backyard. So it just kind of made sense to rebuild the iconic hotel at the time.
Got it. And when you say your family, were your parents also involved in development along with your uncle, or was it?
No, I'm sorry. It was more just my uncle. Russell Galbit, who I really started working with at a young age. And I've really been, you know, working with his assets and his guidance and his partnership now. So it's not parents, it's more overall family, but really with Russell.
Got it. He must have been a great mentor along the way.
Unbelievable. There's nobody better.
Tell us what's next for you. You know, how are you, you know, through the whole COVID pandemic, how have you had to change as a leader, or, you know, how's your outlook changed, or, you know, what are you taking from 20 to look forward to 21 and 22?
I think really what's exciting is Nativo, and, you know, nothing really changed on that level, but we've learned more about health and wellness and, you know, things that, you know, COVID kind of made people aware of. So I think that we're readapting how we're building the building and making some great changes and adding some great things for people to be happy there, especially, you know, a lot of our owners and clients. I think on the men in front, you know, we were always planning on expanding Bodega, and now we've really put it in high gear and really going to rapidly expand that. We should have, you know, 10 or 12 bodegas, I think, by the end of the year. All great markets, all great properties. So we are doing that. And I think, you know, overall, you know, we're still allowed to see focus on hospitality and learning and growing and making money. So I think, you know, nothing's really changed in that. But I think, you know, COVID taught a lot to all of us on many different levels, business, personal, outlook, appreciation. So, you know, I think that those lessons are also good to have as well.
How did you keep your team motivated through the last year?
It wasn't easy. And the truth is, you know, I really give Jared tremendous credit because, you know, he's really the day-to-day operator of the company, not me. So, you know, it was probably the hardest times in his life, I think, especially his career operating. And, you know, he really had to deal with it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, did phenomenal. But it wasn't easy. You know, from my standpoint, you know, I was always thinking macro and high level and how to, you know, keep everything going and what's next step and defense and offense and more on a macro level business. I think Jared really did phenomenal on a day-to-day with our, you know, 200-300 employees and managing everybody, which was not easy. And he really gets, you know, tremendous credit for that. So, you know, he did great at it, and I know it wasn't easy for him.
Yeah. And Miami is definitely having its moment. What's it been like to see the city grow and change and evolve over the last, you know, 15 years, call it, and especially the past year?
You know, I think Miami has been incredible. It's you know, it's really evolved to be, you know, look, I'm born and raised here, so I always said, why doesn't everybody live here? Why doesn't everybody come to Miami? We have palm trees, we have water, we have great lifestyle. I think, you know, people are now, because of what's happened in the world and different states, are actually coming here, and they love it, right? And they realize this place is paradise. So, you know, I think it's been great. I think, you know, it's elevating restaurants we're getting. It's elevating culture we're getting. People are getting very good here. I'm meeting a lot of the great new friends. So for me, it's been really a great thing. But not a shocking thing, because, you know, I've always thought people should always be here.
And now they've realized, so everyone's going there. You have your hands in many parts of every project. Is there one part of the process that you love the most?
My favorite is really design. I love design and I love construction. So that's really what I focus the most. I think, you know, even Jared will tell you, like, even on Bodega, when, you know, we have a team that finds sites and they do leases, and, like, I don't really focus on that. I focus at the end of, you know, where's the site? How's the building look? Does it fit our DNA? Can it check our boxes? And then I really dive into design and the energy of the finished product. That's kind of what I love the best on everything, including TiVo and, you know, whatever I'm involved in. I'm really passionate for design and for the end result of a property.
And after a property opens, do you sit and watch and see how people use it and, like, learn from that?
100%. When we first opened Bodega, I was there for the first, I would say, 6 months, every single day, from lunch to dinner to how the sun went down, and the lights were on, and the music level, and the staff, and the uniforms. Like, I'm very OCD about all those things. So, yeah, like, we opened a place, you know, like, I don't really focus on, call it, the operations or that stuff. I just go there as a customer, right? And I'll sit there and just watch the vibe and see what's going on, and you know, and really focus on that, curating the experience, because that's really what our customers see, right? Like, they don't see how hard it is to build a place, how hard it is to operate a place, you know, all the things back of the house, they don't see. So I'm really focused on what the customer sees and feels to really curate their experience.
It's all about the details, for sure. In an interview with HD a few years ago, you described the industry as 24/7 with no days off. So how do you find time off? First question, and what do you do? And then how do you define success for an industry that's, you know, always evolving and always moving?
So I think I have a lot of time off because I'm never really on or off. So I'm always on, but my on is doing what I love to do. So, you know, I'm, you know, whether it's being on a boat or it's traveling or it's networking at dinners and, you know, different places, like, I enjoy what I do. So it's never off, which is a good thing. And I think, you know, success is different to everybody. I think that that's what makes the world a great place, that, you know, not everybody wants the same thing. And, you know, really, I think when people define what makes them happy in life and what they want to be successful, I think that's how people are successful and happy. So for me, you know, happiness is, you know, growing great properties, seeing great customers, creating great experiences, creating great buildings like the TiVo, which will be there forever and change the skyline of Miami. You know, those are things that really excite me and I think are we justify success as. But you know, listen, we have a great team, great people. We love what we do. And we're just happy to grow and do more stuff.
For sure. And how do you stay inspired, or where do you find inspiration?
Everywhere. I don't sleep much. So, you know, I sleep maybe 4 hours a day, maybe five. And, you know, I'm up reading, you know, all about travel and the world and design. So, the good thing is today with internet and even Instagram and with all these outlets, we can get so much information that, you know, really that's what I love to do. So, you know, I constantly research and look and follow great people and learn from great people. So, you know, it's really just spending time just diving into things.
And do you have a style, would you say? And does your life at home reflect kind of that hotel-like lifestyle?
Yeah, it's funny. So I also build homes, you know, for ourselves and we live in it. And people always love the style of our houses. And the truth is our houses are designed like we live inside a hotel. So, you know, there's a lobby area. There's, you know, all these series of events. So, you know, we like comfortable, great design. My wife actually does interior design. You can look at her Instagram. It's Men in Homes Design. And you'll see some of our houses and inspiration and just palette. And if you really take a step back, you know, it feels like a comfortable, great hotel. You know, that's kind of how we live. So yeah, I think my DNA of hospitality comes off on our house and how we live 100%.
Yeah. Well, and it's so amazing too, to see these days how, and I think at Nativo, you're probably seeing it too, is how all the different design disciplines are, they merge into each other, right? Residential feels like hospitality. Hospitality feels like residential. Office feels like hospitality, you know? So I don't know. Are you seeing that? Is that what you're looking at too at Nativo?
Yeah. And that was the exact thing, was that, you know, all those segments all want hospitality, right? Like, people don't just want an office where you have a lobby and a weird hallway and you share a bathroom and it's like, that's it. Like they want to be able to, you know, they have a conference, order food to a meeting, and I have to wait on Uber Eats or secretary to get it. You know, so I think office wants excitement, energy, amenities, gyms and spas, and, you know, places to meet people for cocktails after work, things like that. Hotels always drive service and amenity. I think people living in apartments also want service, right? Like, they want room service, they want housekeeping, they want to be able to leave and, you know, rent out their place for the summer and get some income to travel. So, you know, Nativo is really this hospitality 2.0 of all those segments you just mentioned, all need hospitality and service. So let's create a building and give everyone what they want. I think that's why Nativo is so successful and so exciting.
Yeah. And how did you come up with the name?
We actually didn't create the brand. It was a new brand that we found, and we were kind of intrigued by it. So we licensed the brand, and then we really developed it. But you know, it's a great brand. It means to be, you know, native in a community, to develop yourself and be one. And it really lends itself great to the area of Miami that we're doing, and also our clientele.
For sure, especially with the boom that Miami's having right now in residential.
Absolutely.
Tell us something about yourself that most people might not know.
That's a hard one. I would say probably my favorite thing in the world that I now experience is being a father of my two twin daughters. So I would say that's my favorite thing I've ever done in my entire life. And I enjoy more than anything else in the world is being a dad to those girls.
How old are they?
They just turned two in February. They're Valentine's Day babies.
Oh, I have twin boys. They're six.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes. So you're getting there. You're almost over the hump at two. So that's amazing. So is there ever been a travel or an experience or something either in hospitality or just in travel in general that you saw or experienced that changed or inspired you?
I think a lot of my inspiration in hospitality and service come from Italy. So I've spent a tremendous amount of time in Italy. I have a lot of great friends there. And I've traveled that country every way you can think about, from, you know, backpacking as a kid to going back, you know, in the Salvador Ferragamo states to really the best of the time. And what I gather from the Italians is that Italians by nature are very into hospitality. And it dawned on me that when you have dinner at people's houses, it's all about the meal and the service and the plates and the style and the experience. And it's the same as a coffee shop or a great hotel there. So I would say my travels through Italy really taught me a lot about service and quality of life and giving people great experiences every step of the way. And there's a reason why it's such a small country, but yet it impacts so many people in so many different ways because, you know, it's just their culture. Now, I know every culture has it from Asia, I've been around the world, but there's something about the Italian way of life that really inspires me and really taught me a lot.
Yeah. That's probably why you and John Meadow get along so well.
There you go.
So given everything we've been through in the last year, I know you said, wellness and understanding that more. Is there anything else you see evolving in hospitality in particular? Anything else you all and your team are paying attention to as we kind of get out, hopefully, out of the pandemic?
You know, I think hospitality is a great sector. I think there's great hotels, there's great product, there's great F&B. And I think, you know, I'm excited for the world to get back open and start trying new concepts and, you know, almost just exploring life a little more. I know people, you know, seem to think about the restaurants for 6 months and travel. So, you know, for me, I'm just excited to see, you know, the world in a way of hospitality coming back and people getting back to that way of life. I think it's very, very exciting.
Do you think travel will mean more?
Yeah, I think people took for granted traveling, you know, eating, going places and these experiences. I think now people are probably more excited for these experiences, right? Like, you know, there's something exciting now about traveling and trying new places. So I think, not that we took it for granted, but it was very accessible, either on a simple one-star scale or a five-star scale, to go and do things, right? Like the world was open. We had no rules. You know, you could literally book a flight and a room and a dinner on your phone and be there the next day, which is the beauty of life. I think when that stopped, people may have taken it for granted or missed it a little bit. So I'm excited to see people actually starting to enjoy it more. Even myself, you know, it's like, I appreciate now traveling more, having dinner with friends and just like being out, where I missed that for, you know, for the whole COVID time, right? Like I didn't have dinner with a friend for, you know, 3-4 months. So, you know, I think people are starting to really feel that and appreciate hospitality a lot more.
Do you have a travel wish?
You know, I do want to go that I haven't gone yet. It's that Aman Resort in Utah. They want to go there this summer.
Yes.
Mungari.
That would be amazing. Leave the twins at home.
Yes. That's where I'd like to go.
All right. So we always end the podcast with the title of the podcast. So what has been or are your greatest lessons learned?
The greatest lesson learned are, if you're going to start a project, start on pen and paper. It's much cheaper than concrete and building. That's the first good lesson. My second greatest lesson is to appreciate every moment of every day and enjoy life to the fullest. And my third lesson is to, you know, always try to give my guests, my customers, my friends, great experiences, great hospitality, and make sure everyone's always enjoying every single day.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. It was so good to catch up with you. Yeah. And hope to see you in real life sometime soon.
You got it. Have a great day.
Thanks, Keith. Talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to Hospitality Design's What I've Learned. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and review us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find full episodes and transcripts at hospitalitydesign.com.